Sometimes it feels like you need a reliable guide just to cut through all the noise around health research, especially when it's about kids' well-being. It can be so much. Well, that's exactly why we do the deep dive. Today, we're taking on a really crucial journey. We're diving deep into a very recent and important systematic review. It's by Kalik and colleagues, just out in 2025. And this whole deep dive is about getting a handle on effective treatments for anxiety in children with autism spectrum disorder, ASD. So our mission, like always, is to take this stack of research, all the articles, the studies, the expert notes, and pull out the key nuggets for you, our listeners, so you can get informed fast, thoroughly, and feel confident about it. We'll be looking closely at the evidence, what works, how well it works, and importantly, any potential downsides.
And yeah, this topic is just so vital right now. What's really pretty striking right from the start is just how common anxiety is in this group. We're talking up to 74% of autistic youth aged maybe 6 to 18.
74%. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, put that in perspective. It's way higher than in typically developing kids. It's more like 1 in 12 children, maybe 1 in 4 adolescents. So what's fascinating is this high rate, plus the unique challenges clinicians face diagnosing it when it co-occurs with ASD, things like, overlapping symptoms, different ways of communicating. It just makes this review such an essential resource, really, for anyone supporting these kids.
That number really does highlight the urgency. So, okay, why this specific review, the 2025 one? Why is it so important right now? What's it adding that we didn't have?
Well, it fills a pretty big gap, actually. The last major comprehensive review looking specifically at this, that was back in 2013.
Okay, yeah, a decade ago. That's a long time in research.
Exactly. Things move fast, new studies, new methods, new treatments pop up all the time. So this 2025 review, it synthesizes findings from what we call randomized controlled trials, RCTs, the gold standard, really published between 2014 and 2023.
Ah, so it's the most up-to-date look using the strongest evidence.
Precisely. It's giving us the most current, rigorous insights into what interventions are actually helping, based on the best quality data we have right now.
Okay, got it. Freshest, most robust data. So with that set up, let's start digging in. What were the main kinds of treatments they looked at in this review? Actually, before we jump into the treatments themselves, maybe let's just quickly make sure we're all clear on what we mean by anxiety. The review defines it pretty clearly as a future-oriented emotional response characterized by feelings of apprehension, tension, and worry about potential danger or negative outcome. That feeling. And we see the usual suspects in kids: generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, that's like worrying about everything, panic disorder, PD, with those sudden intense attacks, separation anxiety, SAD, the fear of being away from caregivers, social anxiety, SA, feeling really uncomfortable in social spots, and specific phobias, SP, intense fear of, spiders or heights, that kind of thing.
And knowing those is key, but it also leads straight into a major challenge, right? Which is, if some core autism symptoms, like, say, restricted interests or maybe repetitive behaviors, can look like anxiety, how do clinicians tell them apart?
Ah, yeah, good point.
Exactly. And then you add in potential communication difficulties or maybe just unusual ways of showing distress. It gets complicated fast. It really highlights why we need specialized assessment tools. You can't just grab a standard anxiety checklist and expect it to capture everything accurately when autism is also in the picture.
That really makes it clear it's not a simple diagnosis.
Yeah.
So understanding these challenges is, well, it's crucial, isn't it? Whether you're a parent, an educator, a clinician, or, just someone wanting to understand, it's about seeing the unique picture for kids with ASD. Okay, now let's really get into the core of the review, the treatments themselves. Let's start where a lot of people might think first. Medications, the pharmacological stuff. What did the review find there?
Right. So the findings here were, well, they were quite telling, mostly because so few studies actually met the review's strict criteria.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Out of 33 studies overall, only three RCTs on medications were included.
Only three.
Okay.
The participants were generally between 5 and 17 years old, mostly male, which is common in ASD research, unfortunately. And they had confirmed ASD diagnoses using good tools like the ADAS-2 or ADIR. It's also worth mentioning some studies had IQ cutoffs, usually needing an IQ over 35 or 50. So generally kids with, say, mild to moderate intellectual disability or higher cognitive function.
And what meds were they looking at?
They looked at a couple of antidepressants, mirtazapine and citalopram, and also extended release guanfacine or GEXR. That last one is often used for ADHD symptoms, but they were checking its anxiety impact here. But here's the kicker, and maybe a bit concerning. Despite seeing some slight reductions in anxiety in both the medication and the placebo groups, these changes just weren't statistically significant.
So no clear win for the meds compared to placebo. Pretty much. I mean, take citalopram. It led to a 16.5% greater reduction than placebo, which sounds okay, but statistically, there was no significant difference between the groups. And GEXR, the guanfacine, it didn't really reduce anxiety symptoms overall. It did show some potential for reducing repetitive behaviors and maybe oppositional stuff, but not the core anxiety.
So the effectiveness was marginal at best. Maybe inconclusive is the word.
I think that's fair.
Okay, but then the big question, especially with meds, what about side effects, adverse effects? What did the review show there?
Yeah, and this is where it gets pretty serious. For citalopram, a huge number, 97.3% of participants reported adverse effects, compared to about 87% in the placebo group, which is also high, but still.
97%. Wow, what kind of effects?
Well, neuropsychiatric ones, things affecting mood and behavior like increased energy or hyperactivity, but also physical stuff, insomnia, diarrhea, vomiting, even dry skin. And with mirtazapine, every single participant had at least one adverse effect. Things like sedation, increased appetite, irritability. One child actually had to stop because of irritability and aggression.
Gosh, all of them.
All of them in that small study, yes. And even with GEXR, four kids dropped out early because of side effects. So it really makes you question the risk-benefit balance, doesn't it? Especially when the benefit, the efficacy for anxiety, isn't clearly proven.
Absolutely. So putting this all together, what's the takeaway for someone maybe considering medication for their child with ASD and anxiety?
I think the main takeaway is extreme caution. These studies were small, they didn't run for very long, 12 weeks max, and they often weren't even targeting a specific anxiety disorder.
Right.
Now, maybe meds could be useful for, say, younger kids or those with lower IQs who might struggle with therapy that needs a lot of talking and thinking.
Sure.
But the review itself says point blank there are significant gaps in the data and just insufficient supporting evidence to recommend them widely for anxiety in this group. So if they are used, very, very close monitoring for side effects is absolutely essential.
That's a very clear message. Given that significant caution, let's shift gears. Let's talk about psychological interventions, where you said the review found much stronger signals. This was the bulk of the studies, right? 24 out of 33.
Exactly. Yeah, this is where the picture really starts to look more promising. The headline here is that cognitive behavior therapy, CBT, came out as the most evidence-based treatment.
CBT, okay.
But, and this is really the key point, it's not just standard CBT.
You mentioned a crucial distinction earlier. Tell us more about that. What makes CBT work better for autistic kids? How's it different?
Right. So the key is what researchers call adapted CBT. It's basically CBT that's been specifically tweaked or tailored for children with ASD.
Adapted CBT. How does that work? What are the adaptations?
Well, they take into account the unique ways autistic kids might think, sense the world, or interact socially. So adaptations often include things like longer therapy sessions, maybe 60 to 90 minutes, giving more processing time. Longer phases for exposure therapy, that's where they gradually face their fears. Lots of visual supports, like picture schedules or feeling thermometers, using simpler language, offering rewards during the session to keep them engaged, and even things like weaving a child's special interests into the therapy itself, using superheroes to teach coping skills or whatever resonates.
That makes so much sense, tailoring it.
Exactly. And this deliberate individual tailoring seems to be what makes the difference. It boosts engagement, it boosts effectiveness. The review showed adapted CBT consistently beat standard CBT, and it definitely outperformed just waiting or getting treatment as usual.
That level of personalization sounds really powerful. And didn't the review mention something specific about the exposure part of CBT being particularly effective?
Yes, that was a fascinating nugget. They noted a rapid reduction in anxiety symptoms, specifically during the exposure phase, in both standard and adapted CBT, actually compared to the phase where they just talk about thoughts, the cognitive part.
Interesting. So actively facing the fear seems key.
It really suggests that, doesn't it? That safely, gradually confronting feared situations is a major driver of change. And the overall outcomes for CBT were really quite encouraging. 17 of those 24 psychological treatment studies showed various forms of CBT were effective. We're talking statistically significant improvements in anxiety.
That's great.
Yeah. And some studies reported pretty high rates of kids even becoming diagnosis-free. The numbers varied, maybe 20% in one study, up to like 85% in another.
Wow, 85%.
I know, pretty impressive. And generally, these improvements seem to hold up at follow-up checks, although realistically, some symptoms sometimes crept back a bit, but usually not back to the starting point.
That sounds incredibly promising. But, even with strong evidence like that, the real world always throws up challenges, right?
Yeah.
What limitations did the review point out for these psychological approaches?
You're absolutely right. It's not all smooth sailing. The review did note things like high dropout rates from therapy, often for practical reasons, family stuff, scheduling conflicts, things like that. Another big one is generalization, taking the skills learned in the therapy room and actually using them out in the real world in different situations. That can be tough.
Yeah, I can see that.
It takes practice. And also, a lot of the studies didn't follow kids for very long after treatment ended, which raises that important question. How do we make sure these positive changes stick long term?
Right. What did they suggest for that?
Oh, the review mentioned things like maybe having booster sessions later on or gradually reducing therapy frequency tapering instead of just stopping abruptly, maybe even just longer treatment protocols to begin with.
Okay.
And one more really crucial limitation to keep in mind. Who were the participants in these successful CBT studies? Mostly high-functioning kids, mostly male, mostly Caucasian, often with IQs of 70 or above.
So the evidence might not apply to everyone.
Exactly. It means we still don't know for sure how well adapted CBT works for kids with, say, more severe behavioral challenges, or maybe co-occurring psychosis, or moderate to severe intellectual disability, or kids who have significant language delays. That's a big gap.
That's a really important caveat. Okay, so we've covered meds and adapted CBT. What about the third category, the alternative treatments? What did the review find in that basket?
Yeah, the alternative category was definitely a mixed bag. Some interesting ideas, but also some clear warnings. There were six RCTs included here.
Six, okay.
Generally, these had pretty small sample sizes. Like one study only had 11 kids, which is tiny. The interventions themselves were all over the place.
Like what?
Well, there was peer-mediated theater stuff, aromatherapy with bergamot oil, a study on cat adoption.
Cat adoption, interesting.
Right. Also, exercise programs compared to more sedentary things like playing with Lego or Minecraft,
Yeah.
wearable anxiety meters that give biofeedback, and even virtual reality exposure VRE combined with CBT for specific phobias.
Wow, okay. A real variety. What were the results like? Any standouts?
Some intriguing bits. The theater things seem to help with long-term trade anxiety, but not so much the in-the-moment state anxiety. The cat adoption study, very small, remember, did seem to help with separation anxiety for the few kids involved, and those gains lasted.
Okay.
Exercise seemed beneficial for everyone who participated, but the kids in the actual exercise group kept their gains longer than the kids doing sedentary activities. That makes sense.
Yeah, intuitively.
The wearable anxiety meters. They helped about half the kids feel calmer after using calming techniques, but overall, there wasn't a statistically significant difference compared to the control group. But here's a really important cautionary finding: the aromatherapy with bergamot oil. It actually seemed to potentially increase anxiety in some kids.
Oh, wow. Increase it.
Yeah. It's a stark reminder about potential sensory sensitivities in autistic kids, right? What might be calming for one person could be overwhelming for another. We have to be so careful with sensory-based interventions.
That's a critical point. What about the virtual reality?
VRE showed some initial promise. About 25% of kids had reduced phobia symptoms right after. But again, it wasn't statistically significant overall, and the effects didn't seem to last at follow-up.
So for this whole group of alternative approaches, what's the bottom line for our listener?
Well, while some ideas seem promising, especially maybe things that combine anxiety work with social skills or peer support, the overall evidence for their effectiveness is pretty low right now.
Okay.
The studies are often too small, and many didn't have strong comparison groups, which makes it hard to draw firm conclusions. On the plus side, they generally had fewer side effects reported than the medications and might be suitable for a wider range of kids in terms of age or ability.
So potential, but needs much more research.
Exactly. More rigorous studies are definitely needed before we can confidently recommend most of these.
Okay, this has been a really thorough dive. Let's try and boil it all down. If you had to give our listener the absolute core takeaways from this massive review, what would they be?
Right. Three main things, I think. First and most clearly, adapted CBT is the front runner right now. That tailored cognitive behavioral therapy, the one using visual supports, simpler language, rewards, special interests, That's got the strongest evidence behind it for helping anxiety in autistic kids.
Okay, number one, adapted CBT.
Second, pharmacology, the medications. Needs a lot more research. The current evidence is just limited, it's inconclusive, and there are pretty significant worries about side effects versus benefits that aren't clearly proven for anxiety specifically.
Got it. Meds need more work. Proceed with caution.
And third, those alternative treatments. They show some potential, but they really need more scientific rigor. Many are still exploratory. We need bigger, better studies with proper control groups to know if they truly work and are safe.
Okay. Adapted CBT leads. Meds need work. Alternatives need proof. Clear.
And thinking about all this, it really raises that bigger question, doesn't it? What are the major gaps we still need to fill to really help all kids with ASD who are struggling with anxiety?
Yeah. And the review itself pointed to several critical areas where future research needs to focus.
Right. Absolutely. It laid out some clear directions. A huge one is diversity and inclusivity. We desperately need more studies that include kids from different racial and socioeconomic backgrounds, kids with lower IQs, kids with more severe autism symptoms, and definitely nonverbal children. The current research is too narrow.
That's crucial. What else?
Long-term efficacy. We need studies that follow kids for much longer after treatment ends, months, years even, to see if the gains really last and what helps maintain them.
Makes sense.
Also, a really critical need for better measurement tools. Remember the diagnostic challenges. We need sophisticated anxiety scales designed specifically for autistic children, ones that account for communication differences and overlapping symptoms to make future research more valid and reliable.
Right, measuring it accurately is key.
And finally, we need more comparative studies. Instead of just comparing an intervention to a wait list, let's compare different types of psychological therapies head to head. Like, is adapted CBT better than, say, a mindfulness-based approach? And why? What specific parts, like that exposure phase, are doing the heavy lifting?
So lots of work still to do. Better inclusion, longer follow-up, better tools, and comparing treatments directly.
Exactly.
So bringing back to our listener, what does all this mean for you? Whether you're that parent trying to navigate the system, a clinician looking for best practices, an educator working with these kids every day, or, you know, just someone interested in the science of helping kids with ASD and anxiety. Well, I think this deep dive really shows us that, okay, yes, there are still big challenges in understanding and treating anxiety in children with ASD, but the science is moving forward. Adapted CBT clearly stands out as a beacon of hope right now. And understanding its key features, that tailoring, that personalization, that can make a real difference in practice and for the decisions caregivers are making.
Couldn't agree more. Knowledge is powerful, especially when it's understood and applied. This review gives caregivers and clinicians solid, current, evidence-based insights. It really emphasizes using tailored approaches to get better engagement, better outcomes. But it also reminds us there's always more to learn, right?
Right.
And that looking at things from different angles, different perspectives, only enriches our understanding of how best to support kids right across the autism spectrum.
Absolutely. And maybe here's a final thought for you to chew on. If we know that tailored interventions, like this adapted CBT, are so much more effective, how might we rethink our whole approach to supporting neurodevelopmental differences? What if we prioritized individual needs, strengths, and interests across all areas, education, therapy, community support, not just for anxiety? What kind of breakthroughs in well-being and learning and quality of life could that unlock? Something to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today.